John Qual from petitioner Lorena Avila. Judges, there are several issues in this case regarding how an alien can be charged with notice of removal proceedings and ultimately ordered removed in absentia. First, does due process permit the INS to receive a mailing address defrauded out of an alien, participate in the fraud by accepting the alien's money for fees for a baseless application from the known defrauder, and then use the address to have her ordered removed in absentia? Ms. Avila was ordered removed in absentia based on notice mailed to an address provided to the INS by a well-known defrauder named Antonio Perez Rodriguez.
Was it her address?
It was her sister's address, Your Honor.
What?
It was her sister's address.
Did she reside there?
Never. In March of 1999, Antonio Perez stole $855 from Ms. Avila and filed a completely baseless application under her name. Ms. Avila never even saw the application until during the course of this petition for review. So the government considered her under deportation proceedings since July of 99 and eventually ordered her removed in July of 2000. She never saw what Antonio Perez filed under her name until January of 2003. The government does not dispute that Antonio Perez was acting in this way to defraud Ms. Avila. The government, however, considers it immaterial to her claim. In the motion to reopen and in the appeal to the Board of Immigration, Ms. Avila argued that she had no knowledge of what Perez had done under her name. Request was made to the Board of Appeals for a copy of the record of proceedings, but this was denied. This is the process by which the Department of Justice has been ordering the deportation of not just Ms. Avila, but hundreds of other similarly defrauded aliens. From approximately January 1997 to April 2000, the Chicago District Office of the INS had a severe problem with quality control over the review of applications filed by aliens seeking benefits under the Immigration Act. Applications were presented with improper filing fees, but the fees were accepted. Applications were presented with no supporting documents, but the fees were accepted. Applications asserted no factual basis to support the application, but the INS accepted the fees. Applications were not filled out, including not signed by the applicant, but the fees were accepted. Applications were presented by unauthorized third parties, but the fees were accepted. In Ms. Avila's case, the INS, against all applicable law and its own regulations, accepted fees of $255 for an application with all of these glaring deficiencies. It was the wrong fee. There was no asserted factual basis. The application was not properly filled out. It was not signed by the applicant. It had no supporting documents, and it was presented by an unauthorized party, in this case, a defrauder of aliens. This improper accepting of fees from Ms. Avila was not only in violation of applicable regulations, it also was a denial of Ms. Avila's rights to due process. This is because the INS is materially to blame for these baseless applications being presented in the first place. The INS's sloppy controls over applications encouraged Ms. Avila to seek an employment authorization, because in those days, the INS didn't just simply improperly accept money for baseless applications, it actually processed a good number of them, and mistakenly issued employment authorizations to unqualified aliens. When the word got out, aliens flocked to the INS, mostly through the actions of unscrupulous notary publics, to request what everyone in the Latin community called El Permiso, the permit. It is reasonably believed that more than 5,000 of these applications, these baseless applications, were improperly accepted for filing by the Chicago INS office after the erroneous employment cards first started being issued. Ms. Avila thought she was entitled to an employment authorization because the INS was issuing them to people like her. Of course, she wasn't entitled to employment authorization. But if these took the money, and then the INS took a portion of her money from the thief, along with a mailing address, only in order to deny the application and commence removal proceedings against her. The government characterizes the actions of the notorious notary public, Antonio Perez, as immaterial, and repeatedly asserts that Mr. Perez was acting on behalf of Ms. Avila. This is impossible for the government to assert. The Code of Federal Regulations clearly defines who is permitted to act on behalf of aliens before the INS, and Antonio Perez was not such a person. The actions of this unauthorized third party are material to this matter, as are the actions of the INS in going along with the fraud. Not surprisingly, the INS has never once in this case, since the motion to reopen, through the appeal to the board, addressed its own complicity in the sorry chapter of abuse of aliens. The INS's action should not be condoned by this court. The second issue is whether an alien can be statutorily charged with receipt of notice of a deportation hearing when she never gave her address to the INS and was never aware that she was considered by the INS to be under an obligation to do so.
But someone else gave the accurate address, didn't you?
Yes, Your Honor. But someone was a defrauding.
But someone gave her the accurate address and she received notification, didn't you?
She never
government found that she, the court found that she received the...
No, it found that it was mailed to her. She never received a judge.
That's her version.
Well, I was calling a member of her family, just sat to one side and didn't pay any attention to it, and she didn't find out about it until the hearing.
Until after the hearing, Judge, when a certified letter was sent to the family, and the family considered that important enough. That was after the fact.
Yes, the letter, the earlier one was just stuck away in a pile of...
That's all we can conjecture, Judge. She never received it. The only certified letter that was received by the family and is acknowledged as having been received was after the order of removal was entered and the family took the letter and signed for it. The government conjures up a false characterization of the facts so it can meet the strict statutory requirement that an alien receive or be chargeable with receiving notice of the removal proceedings. The board's decision of INRAE-GYR states that an address does not become a Section 239A1F address unless the alien receives the warnings and advisals contained in the notice to appear.
What else can the government do but just send it to her home address? Must they hand it to her?
They can't.
I didn't say much.
They're not required to hand it to her, Your Honor.
Right.
The notice to appear was issued against Ms. Avila in July of 99, but prior to that date, Ms. Avila cannot be seen to have provided any address to the INS. Therefore, the INS never could have properly given her the warnings required under the INA Section 239A1F that would have obligated
her. She never gave the address they never could have sent, even though they had it.
Only if you believe that a defrauding party can steal money from someone and give...
The question is, it got to the proper address, huh?
No, the question is how it got there, Your Honor.
No. Did it get to the proper address?
There's no knowledge whether the notice to appear was received. The final notice of the order of deportation was acknowledged as having been received. Ms. Avila had no statutory obligations to maintain contact with the INS, and the INS could not proceed against her by regular mail and have her ordered removed in absentia. It is shocking for the government to characterize the defrauding notary public as acting on behalf of Ms. Avila. In other words, the INS is saying that regardless of what the law and federal regulations permit, it encourages defrauders to steal money from aliens as long as the fraud includes handing over the alien's address and some of the money to the INS. The order of the Board of Immigration Appeals mistakenly applied the facts to the BIA's own precedent. As a matter of law, the court should reverse the BIA's order. The final issue is whether an alien who has been removed order removed in absentia and then when on appeal makes an unrefuted claim of having been defrauded into removal proceedings, can that alien be denied a copy of the record of proceedings? The BIA refused to permit Ms. Avila a copy of the record, and that was an abuse of discretion, as it permitted the BIA and the government to incorrectly argue that her allegations of fraud were immaterial. The record corroborates the allegations of the unauthorized notary's fraud and the INS's complicity. I'd like to reserve my remaining time, Your Honor.
Right, Councilman.
Good morning. May it please the court. Of course, I'm here on behalf of Attorney General John Ashcroft. Now, the issue in this case is whether the board abused its discretion by denying Ms. Avila's motion to reopen, where the notice to appear and the notice of hearing were mailed to the address provided by a person Ms. Avila hired to make contact with the INS. The basic critical facts are not in dispute. Ms. Avila meant that her brother's address at 1211 Fulton Street was and is her permanent mailing address. She uses that address to receive official correspondence. She personally hired Mr. Perez for the specific purpose of contacting the INS to secure her work authorization. Mr. Perez then filed an application with an address obviously provided by Ms. Avila. And that address was 1211 Fulton Street. Over the next few months, a letter denying the application for adjustment, a notice to appear, and a notice of hearing were all mailed directly to that address. When Ms. Avila did not appear for the July 2001 hearing. She was ordered removed in a suspension. This whole case truly boils down to whether that Fulton Street address was appropriate for Section 239 purposes. Admittedly, a Section 239A1F address is one provided by the alien after they're giving three specific warnings. One, you have to give the Attorney General your address. Two, you have to update that address if necessary. And three, if you fail to comply with those obligations, the consequences are severe, meaning you can be removed in absentia. But according to the leading board precedent on this statute, those warnings are not necessary where there are two times when they're not necessary and one time when they are. There are three basic factual scenarios in GYR. First, where the alien acknowledges receipt of the notice to appear or the notice of hearing, such as signing a certified mail return or through some correspondence asking for an extension. Then you know the alien received it. You don't have to show that the Section 239A1F warnings were issued. The second factual scenario is where we know the alien did not receive it. We have definitive proof in the record that the alien did not receive it. That would be, like has in GYR, the notice was sent back undeliverable. In that situation, in absentia removal proceedings are only appropriate where the service can prove the warnings were issued before the alien gave over the address. And the final scenario involves a situation such as the case above. We're not sure if the alien received it, but based on the circumstances, the alien can be fairly charged with having received notice of their hearing. And in this case, notice was properly addressed and sent by regular mail, which is permitted by the statute. So the presumption of proper delivery exists. On top of that, Ms. Avila concedes that other correspondence from the service reached that Fulton Street address, but she never saw them because of some internal failure in the workings of the household. So when the alien can be charged with having received that notice, the INS has to prove that the notice was mailed to the last address provided by the alien. And in this case, that's what happened. The adjustment of status application was sent by Mr. Perez with an address provided by Ms. Avila. And from that address, the notice to appear was sent and the notice of hearing was sent. Ms. Avila offers no proof that the document never reached her. Nothing from her brother or sister-in-law is brought to the court's attention saying that it never reached her. There's no evidence of mail service interruptions at the time in question in that given area. The only defense is that she did not personally provide the service with her permanent mailing address, but she admits that Mr. Perez was the man she hired simply to help her fill out forms and get them to the INS. That happens every day. This is not a representation situation. He did not appear before the board along those lines.
Did she say she gave Perez that address?
It's left out of her declaration, but I think from the circumstances, we're sure where that address had to have come from.
But she, when you say that she said that this was her address, she didn't give it to Perez.
It doesn't say in her declaration, but I don't know where else Mr. Perez would have gotten it.
I don't know, but I mean, with all the time with speculation, I mean, the speculation would be based on what you've got that she gave the address to Perez.
Yes, sir. And then he turned around and gave it to the INS at her behest. That's what matters in this case. The petitioner asked this court to focus on the motives of Mr. Perez, the intent of Mr. Perez, and the fact that he filed the wrong application. What this case turns out is the motive of Ms. Avila. She wanted a work authorization. The intent of Ms. Avila. She wanted Mr. Perez to contact the INS, and the fact that she gave the proper address to Mr. Perez, and the fact that he and then gave that address to the INS.
The fact that she has not admitted she gave that to Perez.
She has not, Your Honor, but it's a safe assumption based on the evidence. The danger of affirming this case as it stands, Your Honor, is that you're going to encourage aliens to set up a straw man situation. All they have to do is have somebody, a friend, anybody, contact the INS with an address.
In danger of reversal of this, Your Honor.
Mm. The straw man situation is going to be used. Contact the INS, send them an address, and then watch the post office box or your address. When something good comes in, like a work authorization, enjoy the benefit of it. When something bad shows up, ignore it, and you almost remain impervious to removal from the United States. So if there are no further questions, Your Honor, I ask this court affirm the decision of the board and deny them the petition for review.
Thank you, counsel. 1 minute, sir.
Your Honor, you cannot hire someone to do an illegal act unknowingly.
And then the IRS, nobody can come and give your address to the IRS, can't you?
Certainly, Judge, but the point here is the IRS lured people into a trap. There was no motive on the basis of Ms. Avila to do anything but do what people similarly situated were doing, was receiving authorization to work. The INS participated in the fraud. She's been saying that from the beginning. The review of the record, which she didn't have until several months ago, makes this clear. She's never once misrepresented what happened to the court. She just didn't know exactly how it happened.
What if all the players get her to get the address she gave to the INS?
Ms. Avila met with Mr. Perez.
Yes, did she give him that address?
Yes,
did
you
actually apply for the permit?
To try to obtain employment authorization.
Yes.
The application in the file is not for employment authorization. It was an improperly filed application. The INS knew that. They knew about Antonio Perez.
They're riches. I have no question about it. But the question is, where did he get the address, and the address he got from her?
Well, I believe the question is how the INS can be complicit in...
Well, my question, not the question in the case. My question at the moment is, he got the address from her.
That is admitted, Judge.
Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much.